Ed Malloy's Personal Power Podcast. Get ready to up your communication and commitment game. Hear from those who have succeeded using Dan's program. And now, here's Dan Malloy.
Boom! How you doing, everybody? Uncle Dan here.
And I'm very excited. I have a very, very entertaining, funny kind of guy, but he's got a serious side to him, and he's just a really a great leader and a colorful individual. Let me put it that way. Chris Burr.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me today.
I've gotten to know Chris over the last 6 months or so, and he's a general manager of a company called Weigel Automotive Clinic. He's become a client of ours, but he's got an interesting background and one that I'm partial to. He was a professional baseball player. Who did you play for?
Was a long time ago. I was a professional baseball player. I played collegially at George Mason University, which I'm very proud of. And then played professionally in the Texas Rangers organization for a number of years. Played 5 years altogether professionally.
Good for you. God bless you. You know, what percentage of young boys, whenever you, so I think back to where I was in Little League, right? My dad was one of my coaches and whatever. As we grew, and I had some good coaches, but my love for the game was always much greater than my ability to play it.
You know? Yeah.
And so I'm just curious, in your background as a young boy, why did you get into baseball? Was there I'm always interested in the conversation surrounding everything, you know, like what was the story for you getting involved in baseball and then taking it to the level you took it?
Two things. You know, you talk about all the people playing, and there are a lot of people who play. And, you know, when you're playing and you're in the middle of it, you don't think too much about it. You're just playing. And somebody, we used to get these motivational talks and a lot of interesting consultants and just mindful people would come in and do motivational stuff with us and training. And one of the guys said, "Hey, if you guys were doctors, okay, this is, you know, a pool of people. You guys, you think about this. Like, you are the professional, so it's
wait a minute. This is a motivational speaker coming.
Yeah,
and he with young boys,
minor league players. So he's talking to minor leaguers, and he says, "Hey," okay, he goes, "You minor leaguers are heart surgeons. Think about that. Of all the doctors out there, you're the heart surgeon. So if you make it to the minors, you're like at the top of the top, and then you make it to the big leagues, the percentage is equal to being a brain surgeon." It puts it in perspective of all the people that are playing, and you're just kind of doing like you did as a kid, and the pool gets smaller and smaller as you move up. And then, you know, as I realized, I was a pretty good player, kind of an all-around player, accomplished hitter, and had to develop my defense. So I was always working. You know, I was kind of a tweener. When I got to the professional level. So I had to outwork people all the time. And, you know, you get to a level and then, you know, I played against Derek Jeter for 2 years and I thought he was terrible. And then all of a sudden the third year, I was like, "Oh yeah." I said, what happened to this guy? I mean, I could see it coming together and the scouts were right, you know, and he was 20 and I was 24. So you also start realizing development phases and it really humbles you. I think if you're, you know, intuitive, a lot of people never get humbled and they actually do really well. They just don't think about it, but you know, you start looking around, you're like, okay, you know, there's a lot of guys out there who do some things maybe that I can't do. So you're trying to make up for in other areas and work at it. And, you know, when I look back, I don't really remember being very good. I just remember working really hard. And, you know, when I communicate to anybody, especially the younger kids I work with in coaching, you know, they're all looking for a magic pill. What do I do with my hand? What do I do here? What do I, you know, I'm like, just, you have to work really hard. Like you have to be prepared and over-prepared in a lot of ways to be successful at a level. And then you master that level and try again. So, you know, how did I learn that was your other question. You know, going back to parental situations, you know, I was a better football player. I was a better hockey player. I love both really? Those sports way more than baseball until I was about 16 and the light kind of went on and it kind of took over. I played all year and I progressively got a little better at a time, but you know, I tell all the kids to play all the sports all the time, and they don't do that anymore. They all play one sport, right? And they're not like when we grew up, you know, in the summer you played baseball, yeah. In the fall you played football. And, you know, my mom supported my athletics. I like the reward, you know, I like the results. I like the feedback because it was an equalizer, right? I mean, it didn't matter who you were, I could win the game or I could do something positive that would impact our team.
I looked at your stats. Looked at your stats, which are published public information, right? You're a good RBI guy. You drove in a lot of runs, didn't you?
That was actually, yeah, one of the better things I did. When people were on base, I knew that I could tell pitch patterns and I could work to a situation. I was a very good situational hitter and try and work for my pitch, right? And, you know, at different points in my career, my pitch is a little different. But, yeah, there were some cool accomplishments. And, you know, I attribute a lot of it to just the support of my community. I loved my community growing up. I loved being an all-star. I liked representing it. You know, we won state tournaments and competed at the national level just for my community, you know, growing up in Vienna, Virginia. So it was a big deal. You know, our athletic community was tied in and still tied in. Some of my best friends are still my high school and American Legion baseball teammates, right?
So all the different levels that you played in.
Yeah, I think growing up, everybody plays Little League. And then you go to the big field at 13, you play Babe Ruth. That's kind of a tweener till high school. I actually got cut from my high school team my first 2 years. I didn't play till I was a junior, which is crazy, but that's another story.
You kept going. It's interesting because not that you rose to the level of Michael Jordan, but he got cut from his high school basketball team.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that always stuck with me. You know, that coach and I became very good friends, and he recently passed, but he honestly told me one day, he goes, I misread you. And, you know, that made me feel good, but it still was very frustrating at the time. And I think I used that mostly as motivation, but it made me a fantastic coach. And, you know, after I got done playing, I coached in college for a number of years.
Really? Wow,
And I coached at Mason, GW, George Washington, and Tulane. And we had top 25 baseball teams up there. And I had summer collegiate teams that were nationally ranked and won a few and four national championships. So I enjoyed coaching. I was probably a better coach than I was a player.
I can see that in you now, the way that you treat your employees, the people that work with you, and how you encourage.
I mean, they're our teammates. We win together, right? They're our teammates, you know. It doesn't matter what rung of the ladder they're on as a teammate. If they're, you know, at the lowest rung, you're going to need that guy. You're going to need him to get a hit in the ninth. You're going to need him to change oil at 6 o'clock, right? I mean, it's the same thing. You're going to need him to make Mrs. Jones feel happy, just like you do. You're a big A-tech or you're big producing service manager, right? You know, a lot of the tenements are the same. And if you want people to rise within the ranks and rise within your organization, they have to see the opportunity, they have to see the fairness, they have to see, you know, the plan that if they do what's expected or more, that the next level is attainable. And you know, I think by putting value on every level, that becomes more identifiable for a lot of them, a lot of our associates. You know, if we make sure that everybody at every level feels appreciated for the value that they bring, which is a lot, you know, and when somebody forgets to put washer fluid in, you know, on a big job, I mean, that's just as critical as doing the job right, you know, even more, you know, because that's what the people see. They don't see the rest of the internal repairs a lot of times. They see the sticker on the windshield or the maintenance reset button or the washer fluid, right, or the air intake.
Was there a moment in time where you decided in your own mind that I'm going to go for this? I'm going to become a professional baseball player. Well, you made that decision.
I would say when I was growing up, I thought I was going to be a wide receiver or a tight end, right? You know, I really believed I was going to play in the NFL and I would try and win the game in the last second all the time. But I think when I realized that this was doable for me, I was about 15 years old. And I was in a camp. I hadn't even played baseball in a year or two. Like I was in a camp. I was around a whole bunch of players who were supposed to be good in the area. And the coaches were coming up to me and asking me what I was doing and helping me and identifying some attributes that I had that they didn't have. Now, I didn't know that. I might have thought that I had some things that they didn't have. I was very competitive. The coach came up to me and says, you're gonna do this. And
the words are important here. The way, yeah. So this is he made a declaration to you.
Yeah.
He said, you're gonna do this.
I was actually
the words.
Well, I was you know, it was my first interaction with the coach who had played professionally. And I said, you know, what's this like? How is this? And, you know, what did you have to do? And, you know, he started going through it. And then a couple of days later, we're working together in the cage. He says, you can do this. You're going to do this. And I never forgot that, you know, and I never forgot him. And I appreciated that. And, you know, he may have said that to every kid. I don't know. But I mean, he made me feel like, you know, he really meant it. And I believe he did. You know, it's kind of a flyer to see a 15-year-old kid and say, you know, you could be a professional or you would be. But there are, from being a coach, I mean, I can identify a group of kids who have a chance. So, you know, it is plausible.
Yeah. The language, I'm interested, you know, those decisions that we make, you could easily have been, well, I can't do this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or yeah, it could easily have been, you need to play another sport. You have to.
Oh, no, this isn't good. This isn't for you.
Yeah, you should go to school. You know, you should really focus on school, right? I mean, you know, I mean, and I hear that all the time from a lot of people. And, you know, I watch people, how they treat development. And, you know, we can kill development just as easily as we can foster it and have people flourish. You know,
it's probably
easier.
What good coaches do, I think, they can invent the future for their students, you know, for their whoever they're working with, just simply by how they interact with them and paint a picture that says, yes, you can do this. I mean, that's what we're trying to do here with our language and our communication training and everything else. Have them realize that they can invent and create whatever they want, you know?
Yeah, the power's there. I mean, you know, and your power that you provide and your coaching is available to everybody. I mean, you don't have to be able to run a 4.40 or jump 3 feet in the air, you know, from a standstill, right? I mean, you just have to have the mental acuity to be able to craft the communication effectively, right?
And you have to think. I mean, but the point is for people to succeed in life, to succeed in sports or music or whatever you're into, you have to at least think that it's possible first. And a good coach can instill that, can declare that, yes, you can do this, you know, like they did for you. And then you went on and you did. Did you have any of your team that you coached make it to the big leagues?
Oh, yeah. I've coached probably 40 big leaguers.
really?
And probably 200 minor leaguers through our summer program. I you know, the funny part was I cut John Papelbon. I don't know if you remember him, the closer for the Red Sox.
The pitcher, yeah.
Yeah. So he wanted to be a hitter. He was from Mississippi State and he couldn't get to practice on time. He'd probably tell you the same story. And he was
get to practice on time.
Yeah. He was like a pitcher hitter. And, you know, we're struggling in the first half of the year. And he's, you know, he's habitually late and he's got different rules. He's pretty good, you know, but he's not what he ended up being. He ended up getting a lot bigger and stronger. So, you know, I said, hey, man, I don't know if you're for this program or not. And, you know, he said, I can do it. I can do it, coach. And the next day he was late, you know, again. And I just locked him out of practice, said, I'll talk to you later. I called his coach at Mississippi State and never talked to me again and said, hey, look, this guy's got it. I put him on a different team in the league and he did okay. I mean, he's a talented kid, but, you know, he wasn't near reaching his potential. And we're all that way. Like for him, that was probably the best thing to do was say, hey, look, you're not going to get by
doing
what you're doing. You've got to give a little bit more. And, you know, by the time I saw him, you know, pitching in the big leagues, he was 96, 97 miles per hour, where then he was like 89 to 91. So he developed a lot and he got a lot stronger. And he also committed to being a pitcher. Like at that time, we were also telling him, you need to pitch. You need to quit trying to hit. Like you're not going to be a hitter. Like you're going to be a pitcher. And at that age, you know, at 19, 20 years old, that's okay to say, right? I mean, it was a good direction. It ended up being valid, but I was like, you know, you're messing around. You're just messing around.
pretend I'm a prospect. I'm an older prospect. You want to talk with me about developing my potential through practice, through what's the type of conversation you're going to have about being rigorous with practice and all that for a new guy that wants to make it? What's the message?
And for you personally, I mean, Dan, you know, let's have a sit down here. You know, you're in a phase where you're going to have to do a lot more than everybody else, right? I mean, you're a little bit older, you're a little bit slower. So you're going to have to overcome that by knowing where to go, where to be, having the right approach every day in how you're going to do your work, how you're going to do your practice, and you're going to have to love your practice. And you know, at the end of it, you might just be an accessory piece for us if you want to be part of our team. You might be the star. I don't know. I'm not going to put a limit on you, but you have to be okay with working towards all those things because, you know, you're in a situation where you're going to have to overcome a lot of your own physical limitations. You know, I'm not saying you can't. I'm saying you're going to have to put in more 120%
to work harder.
Everybody else is putting in 100. Is that something you're willing to do, Dan?
Yeah. Right.
Is that something you want to do, Dan?
Yes, absolutely.
See, now you're declaring.
I want to make the major leagues.
Declaring you want to make the major leagues. Okay, so you know, we're gonna have to spend a lot of time at this. We might have to spend 18 hours a day at this, Dan. And there's still no guarantee.
Similar happened to me when I got into the sport of triathlon, and I was 55 at the time, and I did my first season. Maybe halfway through my first season, I loved it. I just absolutely I always knew this is interesting. This conversation, because I always knew in my head that there was an elite athlete in this body of mine, right? I didn't know how to get it out. But when I found the sport, I tried in baseball. I tried basketball.
You didn't have the right coach. You didn't have the right coach for baseball.
No. And so I hired a coach, a triathlon coach. It turns out he was a world-class runner and a triathlete. And he was putting on this triathlon camp. Michael Trunks is his name. But he ran a 15-minute 5K, which is fast. If you know anything about running.
That's crazy.
That's crazy fast, right. And he ran a 220-something marathon in his day. So he knew what he was doing. And I went to him after my first – I went to a few coaching things with him. And I had a conversation with him. I just said, Mike, I want to make Team USA. And he looked at me, he said, yeah, we can do that. Let's do it. Just like that. And I went, uh-oh. Yeah. It was just like that. Let's do it. He says, yeah, you can do it. He said, basically, he said, you can do this. Let's do it. You know, but then it took, and I was committed at that point in my life. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm getting older. If I'm going to become an elite athlete, I got to freaking do it now because I ain't getting any younger. Right. So I applied myself. And after 5 years, I ended up achieving that goal, and I competed in 3 world championships representing the United States. And I had a lot of, it was quite an experience, but it was that the coach looking at me and saying, yes, let's do it.
Yeah, let's go.
About that. Then he hooked me up with the right. Then I had at that point in my life, I had him as a running coach and a tri coach. Then I had a guy with their Central Park track club who was just running. All right. I had a swim coach, you know, so it's like, took me on this journey, but it was that moment in time, because I remember thinking to myself after he said, yeah, let's do it, what have I done, you know?
I was
beginning this journey. Now I'm in, you know, I declared myself and I'm in, and he said, let's do it, you know. So the first year I failed, I didn't come close. The second year I failed again. The third year I failed again. And then finally the fourth year, each time of each step of the way, each failure, recalibrate, you know, and go back and say, all right, I gotta work on this. And it's like, anyway,
Did you think you were close that third year? Did you think you were gonna make it deep down?
I thought I was gonna make it each of the years, and I came up short, because the way it works in triathlon, on a local level, you have to finish in the top 10% of your sport, of a race, a major race, right? So I was able to do that. And then you go to national championships. And so then you got the top people from all the races all over the country, all getting together. And you got a guy, you know, like 200 people, 150, 300, whatever it is in your age group, all that had won at the top level in these local races, all vying. You had to finish in the top 15 or so in the nation in order to make Team USA. And it was brutal competition.
That's brutal. Cool.
I finally was able to. And then I figured out how to do it. I figured out the routine, how you have to train. You have to train like, you know, between 12 and 15 hours a week, every week, all year round, in the pool, on the running, swimming, biking. But it's quite a journey to have that mindset. That's why I was curious for you, what was the turning point, you know, where you said, okay, I'm in, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I remember just throwing balls up to myself and hitting them. Right. I mean,
what was your biggest moment? What was your, in your whole baseball career, how many games or situations stand out for you as being like, this is what it's all about, you know, like this one moment? Do you have any?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think about the biggest moment. I mean,
bottom of the ninth, two out, base loaded.
So I did hit a walk-off home run off a guy who pitched in the big leagues, Virginia Commonwealth in college. We weren't playing very well that day, and somehow somebody got on base, and I hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth, and we won the game. And the Washington Post was there and interviewing me, and that was kind of cool. And the coach, right after the game, he goes, "You guys didn't play very well today." He goes, "You got bailed out." And, you know, he crushed us. And I remember more about the post-game thrashing by our coach than I do about the home run. But, yeah, you know, there are some moments where more so when I got younger, that the bigness of the event kind of felt like, okay, you know, I mean, I remember our first state championship in American Legion when I was 17 and we're playing at a big professional ballpark, and I hit one, you know, way off the light pole up there, and the scouts came after me after the game, and
really?
You know, that was pretty big because it was a championship game like that. So those, yeah, the more, you know, when you're emerging younger, when I was older, you know, you runs and then you go after the game, and you know, it's like that's what you're supposed to do, you know, that's what you're paid to do. So you kind of, it goes to this different place. But you know, so you know, funny, and a lot of,
I wasn't a power hitter, but there was one that you mentioned it in baseball. I didn't have good coaches in high school and I got cut three times in a row from high school baseball. I'm like, I did go and I played locally and played in Babe Ruth. And
yeah,
we had the Connie Mack League and we had this thing called, I had one coach, I played second base and this one coach, he played pro ball and he taught me a lot. I remember there's one season and I had him only for one season, but he taught me a lot about playing second base, about how to do a pivot the right way and how to, you know, just how to field the ball. And just, it was really exciting. And, but the,
it makes sense.
The best shot, the best in that league, the best hit I ever had, the best time at bat, the ball went foul. I crushed it. An all-star game. And it curved.
I don't remember any foul balls, to be honest with you.
Because I didn't hit. I wasn't a power hitter. You were a power hitter.
That's the first one.
I remember I was up at bat in an all-star game, and I freaking crushed the ball. And it goes, and it just goes. It would have been a home run for sure.
That is awesome. If you read the book about scouting, this famous scout is watching Schofield play, and he ends up being the first pick overall, I think. First one, you know, he goes to the game, and he's 0-for-4, and he doesn't look great at the plate. And this is 18 years old in high school, he's scouting. And the guy coming in out of the bullpen is our best pitcher, and the game's on the line. And he throws him a 92-mile-an-hour pitch on the inside, and he rips it foul and almost kills the third base coach. Ends up striking out, going 0-for-5. And the scout gets done watching the game, and he tells the scouting director, he calls him up, he goes, "That's our guy." And he said, "Well, how do you do?" He goes, "Oh, it's terrible. He's 0-for-5. I mean, he made two errors." He said, "Well, why is he our guy?" He goes, "Because Johnny Hardthrower threw a ball right underneath his hands at 92 miles an hour. He almost took the third base coach head off. He goes, he's got the hand speed to do this, and he's going to learn to hit.
Oh,
yeah, he played 15 years in the big league. So it's like, you know, it's funny, you know, what things matter and what we remember. But, you never know who's watching you, and you never know what's going to matter to somebody else, right? And it's, you know, it's like that foul ball.
I want to tie this back to what we're doing now currently. So for people on your team, anybody else that's going to be watching this, listening to this podcast, what message do you have as a coach, as a profession, as a general manager of a substantial company? What message do you have for people about practicing their craft? I'm now talking obviously about communication.
I think everybody likes to play. We all like to be in the moment and play the game and try and get the result. But I think the true pros, the guys who have the approach down, the guys who show the commitment, are the ones who love to practice, right? Everybody likes to play. You got to love to practice. You got to love to practice your craft. You got to be a guy who, regardless of your position, you want to outwork everybody and put in the extra time in the practice, because you'll be the best player if you do that. Ultimately, if you have the right makeup and the right ability, and generally you're in a position because you have that. So, you know, that's what I find. And if I had something to tell somebody, I'd be like, yeah, everybody likes to play. Everybody likes the result. You got to love to practice. I mean, you got to love it. You got to really want to do it and really be in there, because you can't fake it. You can't fake it in front of a customer. You can't fake it in front of your employees. Can't fake it in front of your ownership. You know, you got to love it. And you got
to
live
it. I like that. You got to love that. You got to love. I call it commitment to commitment. You right. have to be committed to the process. Trust my coach, and I trust the process that he's got me into. So I just have to
process.
I have to stick with the process, the practice, the practice, the practice, you know?
I'm extremely process dedicated, process oriented.
Clearly.
I do not, you know, like even discussing personalities or persons in general. I like to talk about process. You know, I never get emotional or personal into anybody's performance. I just see how we did with the process and evaluate that. And it keeps it professional, right? I mean, so many times in our industry, people aren't equipped with the right skills to keep things process oriented, and they get down to devolving into some personal slight
personality.
Yeah. Hey man, you're not good. Hey man, he's not great. It's like, come on, you know, help me get better, right? Get me to a place where I'm going to get better. Help me help you. Right. And that's all process driven. That's all showing them processes.
Well, I like this. I really like this conversation, because then we can take a new hire or a new employee and say, look, if you're dedicated, if you're committed, and you want to make this happen, I'm going to put you into a process that works. We know it works. And you just work the process and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And if you're a manager and you're managing people, it's a lot easier to set standards through process and expectations than it is to have a personality contest of, you know, guys we like and guys that we expect things out of. Like, it just doesn't work, you know. And if you really want to be big and win the game, at some point you have to commit to standards and processes. I mean,
you just raised another question for me. Do you ever see somebody come into one of your, it could be an employee now in your situation as general manager or as a baseball coach, did you ever have somebody come in and your first blush on the prospect or the new hire or whatever is like, I don't know, I'm not sure, but you don't know them yet. And then all of a sudden you see something developing, you see people that surprise you and what they're capable of. Does that happen? Has that happened a lot for you?
Oh yeah. You know, and I believe in, you know, blocking my internal biases, right? So I try and get to a place where I'm listening to candidates, prospects, and just hearing the information that they're giving me and saying, okay, what about this person could be very positive for us? And it really opens up the field of candidates versus closing them, really, you know, and then you say, you know, here's this availability, and let's see how you work within the processes, see how you fit within the infrastructure. And, you know, it allows you to take different talents, sometimes more talented people, and find spots for them because they enhance your, you know, your institution, your business. And so many times, like, we have a guy who I hired out of IT, and now he's running one of our bigger stores. And, you know, he was a Georgetown grad who had nothing to do with our business, nothing, zero. He was totally in a little closet room by himself. And now he's, you know, probably one of our best managers, right? And he's been in the business 2 years.
Really?
But I mean, he can run the processes. He can talk to the people, and he does not personalize anything. He just completely keeps it professional. And I mean, if you give the people the tools to do that and they get the understanding of it, you can become really powerful. And I believe in that. And I believe in, you know, the commitment and process are the two things that, especially with your language I was explaining today, it allows me to identify the thing that I've always just felt intuitively I knew, but I couldn't explain it. And it's now I'm asking for that commitment through the language. And when they regurgitate and reflect the language, I know they're committed to at some level. And then I can, you know, how far they go, if they get into the power language, then I know they're really committed, because I throw the power language at them to see if they're even familiar with it, right? They don't know that I know it. I don't know if they know it. You may know that I know a little bit of it. Yeah. I'm still learning and it's new to me, but I'm like, man, it's very powerful when I can get somebody to reflect that commitment through power language. And, you know, if we've got people doing that, we're way ahead of the game.
I think you are. I mean, as you know, we measure it all, but you guys are doing fabulous. And I know it's because of you and because of your leadership and your coaching capabilities.
I'm not on the phones.
No, but you're not. But it's your leadership. You have everybody's following you. You developed your leadership skills, and people are following you. I was down at my cousin's house. I'm like 25 years old. My cousin lived down in this with his wife and his family in this this back acreage. His wife's family had this farm and this big old farmhouse in central New Jersey somewhere. Where they had built a house out back, and they're having a barbecue. And I'm down there. I'm 25, and I'm in the main house, and they had a family room in the back. And I had never been in there, so I'm in the family room, and I'm looking around. The walls are covered with plaques from Cooperstown. I'm going like. So I go to my cousin's wife, Barbara. I said, Barbara, what's all that Cooperstown nonsense? I thought somebody was a big collector and they were collecting plaques. And she looks at me and she goes, no, this is not nonsense, Dan. She goes, my great-great-grandfather started professional baseball in this country. And I was like,
Abner Doubleday?
No. He started the game, but it was Harry Wright.
Okay.
Her name was Barbara Wright. Her great-grandfather was Harry Wright. He was the manager of the very first professional baseball team, and his brother George Wright was the star second baseman.
And pitcher.
Wright, George Wright, and so then I got to sit. I after I learned that, I went, wow, I'm such a big baseball fan. I actually got this. I sat on the front porch of this old farmhouse with Harry Wright, the descendant of the guy who started professional baseball. And this guy was a character. He walked out. He had missing one leg. He ran the hardware store in town, and he walked out on his crutches. Sat down with me. And we talked baseball for an hour, and it was. But that I never forget that. So they always get invited whenever they have the induction ceremonies. Their family gets invited to go sit in front row. Listen, I appreciate you.
Hey Dan, thank you for all you're doing, and you know, you're making a huge impact on us and a lot of people's lives. So. Can't wait to continue, you know, our communication and association.
Keep moving forward. Keep inventing. Yeah, great.
Yeah, thanks, onward. Appreciate onward. See you.